Before I get started today, I wanted to make sure that I give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind body coach out of Los Angeles, and you might remember that she guest hosted the podcast back in January, came on live with me in August of 2021, and she came on live with me in August of 2022, just a few months ago, where we did episode 238 called Stress Talk. Jeannie spent 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her both physically and mentally exhausted. She healed herself completely, and now she's obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. In her program, clients learn how to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and finally heal their chronic pain for good. Feeling stuck in your journey? Are you frustrated because maybe you're knowledgeable about these TMS concepts, but you just haven't seen any improvement? Maybe it's difficult for you to implement the tools or tell yourself that you just don't have time. Perhaps your next step is to work one-on-one with a coach like Jeannie, who specializes in support, consistency, accountability, and results. Jeannie offers a free 45-minute consult where you'll identify what's holding you back so you can take your next steps towards healing. Go to her website, jeanniecolwin.com, that's JeannieKulwin.com, to book your free call to see if it's a good fit. It is Thursday, December the 8th. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. And before we get started, I wanted to make sure that I give a shout out to the patrons of the podcast. Go to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast if you are interested in helping support the show. Since last week's episode, Julie is a new patron. Thank you so much, Julie, for coming on and supporting. And then Albert and Deborah and Daniel and Kirk and Emily, Paul, Amanda, Elise, Enda, those people all joined in 2022. Thank you so much for your support. 2021, Dominic, Sasha, Sylvie, John, and Jason. And then going back to 2020, Mindy, Irina, and Kelly, and Tony, and Michael, Mike. And then we go all the way back to 2019, and it's Christina, and Ross, and Julie, and Brian, and then 2018, the OGs going all the way back to November of 2018, Arnie and Barb. Thank you all from the bottom of my heart for continuing to support the podcast every single week and every single month. Got another great recovery story today. So there was a post on Facebook in this TMS hyphen the Mind Body Syndrome group from someone named Cecilia that I caught a little over a month ago. It was in November, and I'm going to read a little bit of it and why it caught my eye. She said, "I have posted here a lot, both emotional content and obsessive symptom checking content, but I wanted to post just to say that my year-long adventure with severe elbow tendonitis is entirely gone, and the only explanation for its resolution is TMS. The only thing that helped it finally go away for good was to simply ignore it and live my life." So we're going to go into the whole story on today's podcast. I'm very excited for you to hear that. Cecilia is an athlete, and as you know, I love hearing athlete stories. So without further ado, here is Cecilia and I. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and something that I feel like I don't have as often on the podcast as I would like, but it's always welcome, are people that do what I would call some of the more challenging athletic endeavors that are out there. And I have a climber on the line with me, and I'm anxious to get her story. This is Cecilia, based out of New York. Are you there?
Yeah, hi.
So it's New York upcoming. Now, you told me just before I hit record that you're about to embark on a heck of a road trip starting tomorrow. Is that right?
Yeah. I have basically been living in my car for almost a year, or like at campsites and climbing a lot. But I'm relocating to New York.
Are you originally from the West Coast, or are you originally from somewhere else?
I'm from Ohio originally.
Okay. Cool. Well, it's hopping all around. I think that's awesome. A lot of adventure. Certainly into that stuff. So the reason I'd asked you here is that for those of you that don't know, I'm an admin for, it's on Facebook, it's called TMS hyphen the mind body syndrome. So I'm an admin on that group. I'm not very vocal anymore. I'm sort of in the peripheral for most people that are on there. And, to be honest, like oftentimes it's somebody flags a post and then I get notified. And a lot of times that's about the majority of what I do. But Cecilia had this wonderful post, a couple of weeks ago where she had talked about overcoming this really intense pain that she'd been experiencing. And so that's why you're here. So, I'd love to just kind of get a little bit of background on what was, maybe we'll start with like, what was the intense pain and when did it start? What were you doing? And then we'll kind of see where the conversation takes us.
Yeah. I love talking about this now because the story of the pain is just kind of, it's like a labyrinth in itself. So I started getting elbow pain basically one day, kind of randomly after or while I was climbing. And I remember when it started, I immediately had like a panic response because I had been training a lot leading up to that point, and I had a lot invested in that process of training.
Yeah.
So when I felt the pain in my elbow, I was like, oh no, like this is the worst thing that could possibly happen. Because elbow tendonitis is kind of like a very common climbing injury that is really persistent and hard to deal with. Well, it's kind of known that it is hard to deal with.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just started one day randomly. So I didn't get an injury. But in retrospect, when I kind of like started doing this detective work in my own mind, trying to figure out what had happened to cause the tendonitis, or to kind of figure out maybe it wasn't tendonitis, maybe it's a muscle, whatever. So I kind of like, I remembered I had actually woken up really abruptly like a few days before and kind of smacked my elbow on the windowsill. And I was like, okay, maybe it's just a bruise from that. But I kept fixating on it and it started getting worse. And then I remembered that I had done this really intense thing for work. I was working at a gym and they had had me install a curtain essentially, like, and I needed to climb to install the curtain, but I had the curtain attached to me and it weighed like 60 pounds. Mm-hmm. So I was basically doing this like intense climbing. And I like in retrospect remembered, oh, actually maybe I felt this pull in my elbow when I was doing that. And that was why the pain started. And like I landed on that theory. So yeah, it grew into this really intense pain in like my elbow, my right elbow and forearm. I mean, I can keep going, but like maybe I'll stop there for now. So it was just localized in my elbow/forearm and I kind of like, yeah, like figured out maybe what had happened.
Had you had like an elbow issue previously before? Like, is this something where it happened and you were like, oh, not again? Or like, was this kind of the first time?
This was the first time I've ever had any injury at all whatsoever.
Yeah. Good for you. It's funny, the mental hurdles or the gymnastics that you're talking about where it's like, oh, maybe I did this thing and I moved in, you know, this subtle little thing that I was doing. I was hanging this, like, I totally know what you're talking about. I mean, I remember sort of it was in the like days leading up to my issues getting too hard to ignore and my justification on why my knee suddenly started to hurt so bad was that I was doing lunges on a slight incline. And I'm talking incline as in the slope of a garage where like nobody with the naked eye would even notice. And if you put a ball down, it's likely not even going to roll. But in my mind, that was why it happened there. So I totally hear that. Okay, we'll keep going. Keep going.
Yeah. It's so funny. I just immediately had to be this detective to figure out exactly what had happened. In fact, it feels almost like an obsessive pursuit, thinking about it now. But then, so I went to, there's kind of like, so I went to a physical therapist who was specific to climbing. And I told him what had happened in more detail, just the quote unquote, like accident at work and everything. And he did some physical testing and he was like, you know what, you don't have a tendon issue. It doesn't match like the physical tests that I've done. You just strained a muscle in your forearm from doing that intense, like essentially weighted climbing for so long. Yeah. So it makes sense that you, he told me I strained my supinator muscle. And honestly, like I may have at that point, like maybe it was just sore, more sore than usual. But he gave me basically just a very simple PT plan to do. And I left and started doing the exercises. And I, in a few weeks, started feeling better. And then in about a month, I felt like I was ready to climb harder things again. And the first day that I got back on a harder climb, I had another accident, which was an actual accident this time, where I sprained my ankle. So after I sprained my ankle, the pain started getting worse again in my elbow.
As you were saying it, I was almost certain that you were going to say something like that to follow it up. So that's funny. Okay, keep going.
So, and it was funny because when I, it kind of mapped onto an explanation in my mind of like, I think the crux of why this pain lasted for so long was that I was convinced that it was going to, like, it was my deepest fear.
Yeah.
So when I sprained my ankle, I was like, well, now I can't really use my feet for a month. So I started doing, I was like, well, my elbow's healed enough maybe to just do some like arm only exercises. And then after that, it just, the elbow issue got like 20 times worse.
Had you been doing anything? Because, you know, you sort of, you have this strain going on, but then you have the ankle thing, but the elbow's getting worse. Were you engaged in any activities or like doing anything that, you know, thinking back retroactively, of course, but, and hindsight's always 20/20, but thinking back, like, were you doing anything that would have made logical sense that, hey, this is why my elbow is getting amped up, even though you just got this ankle thing that began?
Because when I started doing more arm intensive stuff, I was basically doing climbing exercises without feet. Mm-hmm. But when the pain came back, it came back in different places.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then also a kind of complicating factor here is that I have actually been aware of TMS and of like neuroplastic pain and stuff for years and years. I was introduced to the community and to John Sarno and everything back in 2018, because I was having a lot of neurological symptoms that I kept going to the doctor for and never got an explanation. And I actually turned to Sarno's work to work through some of that stuff.
Wow. Okay, cool.
But it was funny because I was like, I've never actually had chronic pain. So when I even initially got the pain, there was like a part of my brain that was like, this is probably TMS. I don't even remember getting injured. And then I'm like making up like connections that maybe this was the injury. But like in the back of my mind the entire time, I'm just like, this fits the profile of TMS like to a T, especially my intense emotional reaction to getting injured at that time, because I had so much invested in climbing and pushing the grades that I was climbing.
Yep.
And I was even writing I was in grad school prior to this, and I was writing a thesis on the history of psychosomatic illness too. So I knew all of this stuff, but it really just snowballed into being like, no, it can't possibly be this. Like, there's something physically wrong with my elbow.
What do you think? That's an interesting perspective, because you wrote your master's thesis on psychosomatic pain. You're aware of the background and stuff, yet there is a resistance, and a pretty strong resistance, to it being a logical explanation for what's going on now. What do you think? What's up with that resistance? Like, what do you think the resistance was? Why would you, of all people, have that?
You know, I think it's because my biggest problem in my entire life, and still to this day, it crops up in other ways now, is that I don't trust myself. Okay. I don't trust my own perception or my own beliefs, or my own knowledge of my own body. So even though there was something deep inside me that was like, you're fine. Like, maybe your arm's a little sore, but you didn't do, like, you know, I didn't have an injury. So I was like, there's something deep down where I know that I'm fine, but I couldn't allow myself to trust myself. Yep. And I think another factor with that is that and this is like something that I'm interested to hear more about, like maybe you have perspective on this as well, in the climbing community in particular, but I think in any athletic community, there's almost a fixation on injury, and it ends up being a kind of like almost a currency or a way of communicating with other athletes, where you're like, oh yeah, my tendonitis is acting up, my finger injury, my hamstring, and then you hear like the litany of PT exercises, and everyone's wearing a different brace. Like,
okay, let me paint a picture for you, because I totally know what you're talking about. You walk into a gym, and you being me, but you walk into a gym, let's say a CrossFit gym or a weightlifting gym, and it's about 10 or 15 minutes before class starts, and there's three or four or five people that are maybe in like the lobby area, and they're using a foam roller, or they're stretching, or they're using voodoo floss or bands or whatever, and people sit around, and this is the way that they connect. And it's really like, once you've sort of seen it and you've kind of gone through an experience of stuff that you're talking about and that we're talking about, you can see it really from a mile away. But when you're in it, it's very hard. And the same phenomenon, really, so I've seen this. So family, during COVID, when family functions were not happening, at least in the very beginning, when they were not really happening, I kept thinking, this is awful. However, not seeing relatives where everybody stands in a circle and talks about their various issues and pain and ailments and all this stuff about, it's really refreshing, actually. But I mean, I see it at the parent pickup line to pick up my third grader from school. I see it literally everywhere. And you're absolutely, I mean, I've never heard it put that way, but it's the most perfect way I've heard it described, that it really is currency. I think that's spot on.
Yeah, honestly. And then the way that you're kind of expanding even outside of sports communities, just standing around in a line talking about your ailments, it's like it feels to me in many ways like a way of connecting that feels safe to people. Yeah. Because let's say, I mean, and I'm thinking of in my case, it almost felt like if I were to contradict the community of, you're always doing some kind of PT, like you always should stretch, you always should foam roll, like if you don't, you're going to be injured, then like I would lose a connection to my community or something. And I think that was unconsciously going on. And then at the same time, in a more broad sense, I mean, I think that we're all probably really uncomfortable and in a lot of emotional pain all the time, but we don't know how to talk to each other. So the sharing of physical ailments becomes like a vector or proxy for not being able to connect on a different level.
It truly is a universal language. And we're going to get to this, but it does sound like you've sort of solved that part of it. But what I would have said. How long ago was this, by the way? Like where your, you know, your elbow would have been killing you and you weren't participating in the stuff you wanted to do. Is this a couple of months ago? Is this a year ago? How long ago are we talking?
So the quote unquote injury, the event at the gym, it was in October of 2021. Yeah. Okay. So okay. A little over a year ago, and it just, the pain actually didn't go away until, August of this year.
Oh, so damn. Almost okay. A year. So yeah. If you and I bumped into each other at a bar 8 months ago and you were telling me about this, one of the things I would have asked you was, in terms of your climbing community, if you had to show up for training or whatever, and you could talk about anything you wanted to these other people in the community, except for anything related to physical pain or ailments, what do you lose? And I think that you would have told me what you said a couple of minutes ago, like something would have been missing. And I see things like this where we sort of rely or use just certain, there's certain actions, what's the word I'm looking for? Certain actions or things that we do just as on a society basis that almost help us deal with like our moment to moment anxiety. So like I talked about getting in a circle with family members or friends and everybody's talking about their pain issues and everything. The other equivalence I see of this is like you see somebody that maybe you haven't seen in a couple of weeks or whatever, and you ask them how they're doing. And for me, what I observe is 90% of the time, the first thing that they will say is how busy they are. So like that's something that I consciously do not do is ever use the word busy whenever somebody asks me how's it going or what's been going on or what have you been doing lately or whatever, because it's such a, I think it's a crutch and a way to like connect with other people. But the other one, and I see this a lot, is at the grocery store. If you're standing in a grocery store line and you set your stuff down on the little, like the conveyor belt, and you're waiting your turn, even if there's nothing to look at on a cell phone, 90% of people, if not more, will pull out their cell phone and just browse. It's almost like a comfort or like a baby blanket for a child. So these all fall into the same realm, like some kinds of crutches that we use to either mask or hide anxiety that's going on in that moment, my perspective. But then also the I'm busy thing is a way of connecting when we don't really know other ways that we can connect. And if I don't say something like that, how can I connect with this person? And it's very subtle, but it sounds a lot like what you're talking about. So came to mind.
Yeah. The busyness thing is fascinating as well, because in my experience, either I have used that or it has been used towards me as a form of like, I'll talk to you, but just know that you're like, my time is very valuable to me. And if like, you, like, don't take too much of it because I'm busy. I just need to let you know I'm busy.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's an avoidant way of connecting despite the avoidance. It's an interesting one.
I'm a big Seinfeld fan, and one of my favorite, I love Jerry Seinfeld's delivery on the show, but one of my favorite line, and nobody, like, unless you're a really deep in the weeds Seinfeld fan like I am, there was this episode where he was talking about, he hadn't heard from somebody in a long time, and he said, too busy. Who's too busy? Pick up the phone. And I always, that's just always what I think about is this phrase of the busyness. Okay. So we're back in the thick of it. Like you had this long stretch and you didn't really solve this issue until August. What happened, or like talk to me about the summertime, because that's when this issue was solved. So tell us about how you unraveled it.
Yeah. So just going back a little bit, when the pain started again, it actually was incredibly, it was just like worse than it ever had been originally. So I had that first month and a half, maybe 2 months of the original pain, in which I was doing progressive loading and doing that doctor's exercises, which helped until again that ankle injury happened. When God, I even forgot, it's been such a crazy time that I forgot that it did go away completely at one point. And then, so when it started again, like after the ankle, it was worse, right? So I actually scheduled another appointment with the same doctor, and he, to my surprise, actually told me that it was like psychogenic pain. He was like, I'm doing another, he did another physical exam. I also had an MRI and it came out clean. And he was like, okay, so from what I see, you are experiencing this pain disorder where your body has become attached to this area, or your mind has associated this area with danger. And he followed, I forget the guy's name. He's like an Australian guy who writes about this from kind of like a little bit of a different perspective than Sarno, but very similar. And so he actually had me do mirror exercises, like phantom limb syndrome exercises and everything. And he was like, no, you're entirely cleared to climb. You can do whatever you want, but you have to just be aware of how much you expose yourself to psychologically and how quickly, because if you keep yourself in this fear cycle, then like it very well could be drawn out for a long time. So even after that, there was something that I was like, even though that was a validation of my own deepest belief that I couldn't acknowledge, I just like, it just got worse from there. And I was to the point where I couldn't even open, like if my arm was bent and I opened it, it was like excruciating pain. I couldn't, when I woke up in the morning, to like stretch my arms out was painful. It was really painful. I couldn't hold a water bottle had barely any water in it.
I'm curious on the messaging of the doctor. I want to make sure I get this quote right. I wrote, because I was I was feverishly typing it as you were saying it. Be careful of how much you expose yourself to psychologically, because you might re-aggravate it. Did I get that quote right?
Yeah, and it's definitely not a direct quote or anything. It's just he gave me sort of a graded exposure kind of plan in terms of, well, if you go from 0 to 100 when you're already in pain, it might just exacerbate the problem.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But then I was like, okay, I don't know what to do. I was just always in pain, and it was also it had started to actually affect my like symmetry and stuff and different things I could do on each side. But then basically when it stopped was I went to, so I was in Montreal for the summer. I was visiting some old friends. I used to live in Montreal, and they're all climbers as well. And that was another environment where like one of my good friends there also had a very similar elbow issue. And we were like, you know, at the end of the day, if I didn't put the ball on the wall, like against my, it was like, I don't know, these theories of, well, it's your pec that's tight and your pec is making your elbow hurt because, you know, like, I don't know.
I know what and you're saying. So,
yeah. And like, you know, my friends, I love them, but you know, they were like, if you don't use a lacrosse ball, you're going to keep being in pain. And I was just like, you know what? I don't know. I was just like, I don't care anymore. I'm in pain anyway. So I'm just going to keep climbing. I'm just tired of paying attention to it. Yep. Like, I don't know. I got exhausted. And in August, I went to Squamish, British Columbia to live there and just climb outside. I was living at like the campground basically.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was just like within a week or so of being there, the pain just went away. It's completely gone. And it doesn't make sense. Like you think, like some people might say, oh, well, you stopped doing gym training, so, you know, you're putting less, you're doing less volume or whatever, so that's why. But honestly, I was climbing way more and doing harder things outside. On my rest days, I would do like different types of climbing. And so I was doing like 4 or 5 days of climbing in a row consistently. I don't know. And it just went away. And I think there were a lot of factors in why it went away. And they were all entirely emotional or psychological and had to do with my environment and my surroundings and stuff.
So this might be difficult for you to answer. So just do the best you can. But if I asked you 10 or 11 months ago, Cecilia, what would you do if your elbow never got better? What do you think you would have said 10 or 11 months ago?
I wouldn't have even, I would have just melted down. It wouldn't even be a rational response. It would just be like, that means everything is over and I mean nothing and I'm unintelligible to the world. Like, you know, like.
So, okay. So let's flip that. And you pretty much already gave us the response on this. But let's say that I told you in August when you were living in BC, Cecilia, your elbow is never going to get better.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I just would have been like, well, that's how it is. Like,
so there,
I don't know.
So the reason I asked that is, gosh, this is like super on the fly. I got a message from somebody not long ago. Hold on, bear with me. Let me find it. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got it. So, I don't know if you know anything about the condition or syndrome or whatever you want to call it, thoracic outlet syndrome, but it's sort of, for my sport, for weightlifting and CrossFit and deadlifting, it's kind of like the death sentence for an athlete. And that's what that's what was being told to me for a long time that I had. And so this person reached out to me. She sent me a message on or a DM on Facebook. This was from last Wednesday. She basically just said, hey, like, I have this TOS diagnosis. I've listened to your podcast. I feel like I've gone to all ends of the earth to heal. I don't know what to do. And I had said, if I told you that your TOS symptoms will be there forever, how would that make you feel? And her response sounds a lot like what you would have told me 10 or 11 months ago. So, and it's tough for me. If you feel like there's any more that you have to provide in context of your response you just gave me, please do. Because I have a challenge as somebody that's kind of been in the thick in the trenches of talking to experts on this show for so many years. But to have somebody from the outside like you, I mean, do you have any words of wisdom for people that, like this person who sent me a message, who says that, you know, they're going to be crushed and defeated and angry and frustrated and sad if they had their symptoms forever? Because you had this really dramatic change in answers to that question, yet only a few months really separate the two. Do you have any additional context or wisdom that you can give with your background?
Yeah. God, there's so much actually that I could say I think, first of all, in many ways, I'm still in the process of, because I'm still, the thing that I've learned is that I'm still in pain now, but I'm just in emotional pain.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I get really mad at myself when I can't do things. Like, my identity is still tied into this activity or this performance. And although it's not under the surface and being like spoken through my body at the moment, you know, like, it's still not entirely, it's not entirely unraveled. But I think that when I first got injured, or when I started having the chronic pain, I really had no idea how much my self-worth was really like laminated onto being able to like being a certain, like climbing a certain grade or being a certain amount of strong or whatever. I wasn't aware of that. So that's one aspect. And then, I think I became more aware of it, and having an awareness of like how toxic that can be allowed me to start working through it. But also when I started, after I got the kind of quote unquote diagnosis of, oh, this is actually like neuroplastic pain from that physical therapist who, you know, is an authority that I trust. I started going just obsessively into healing activities, like emotional healing activities, to where I was trying to journal all the time and I was downloading all of these books and doing, like, I'm sure that there are so many of them, of the, like the healing back pain one, and trying to apply all of them to my own situation and doing all the exercises and writing. And honestly, that didn't help because I was just fixating on it even more.
I even relate that to something you said a couple of minutes ago, where now you're just in emotional pain. And then I laughed and I, it was just a response, because what I imagine is that before you sort of had this epiphany, and even though you have a background in this and you wrote your thesis, I mean, my mother wrote her master's thesis on a mycorrhizae, and I don't think I couldn't tell you what that is today. So it's nice that somebody wrote their master's thesis on something that I understand, at least now. But I think that the small and subtle yet really important distinction is that a year ago or a year and a half ago or whatever, if you had emotional pain, you may have it for a second, but then the distraction is the pain. Yeah. So you're not thinking about, you know, about the places where you feel you come up short, whether that's in your sport or in life or in certain things or whatever, because you have the elbow thing or you have the ankle thing or you have whatever. And so now you have the emotional pain, but then the thing is that you're recognizing it. Whereas a year ago or a year and a half ago, you might not have had that much recognition. You probably were still in emotional pain, but you were feeling it through your body. And Sarno has said in his books, and really in every subsequent book that anybody's really written on the topic, the question inevitably becomes, would you rather have emotional pain or would you rather have physical pain? Well, duh, I'd rather have emotional pain, but most people don't process that way. And it's, you know, when you're in the thick of it, that's really tough to change gears like that.
Well, I also realized that I had a really funny moment, and when my pain was really, really at some of its highest, like spikes in pain, I was at the gym one day and I was climbing and I was feeling very self-conscious, and I wasn't climbing as well as I had been, and I got mad and I started, and I put my elbow brace on because it was almost a signal to others that I was injured. So I'm not actually this weak, you know, like I couldn't, it was such a clear, I didn't think about it while I was doing it. I didn't think like, well, I don't want everyone to know that I'm struggling right now, so I'm just going to put a brace on my elbow and then they'll know that I'm injured. It was really just unconsciously I did these actions, and then I thought about it for more than 10 seconds and I was like, oh, I'm really insecure right now. Like, and it's also more acceptable to have a physical barrier to performance than it is to have an emotional barrier. I think especially also if you're like a woman, because if you get frustrated or upset, you often, there are a lot of negative responses to that. So having like a physical crutch is kind of socially useful.
Okay. So again, go back to what we talked about maybe 20 minutes ago. So you just said it's easier to have a physical barrier to performance than an emotional one. So using it as a currency, you know, using a physical ailment or an injury as a currency, and you walk in and you see your training partners and you can talk about your elbow or wrist or thumb or like whatever, and you have that currency, versus if you walk in and you start speaking about emotional problems, they might walk away, or they might not, you know, they don't want to be Cecilia's friend anymore. So, right. Exactly. That's like a negative currency. So, it totally fits with what you've been saying throughout.
Mm-hmm.
So, I told you 35 minutes. We're at 36 minutes. I'm curious, you know, one thing I'm curious about now, like you look back as we wrap up and you've been aware of neuroplastic pain since 2018. Talk about maybe just like, and it'll be tough because 4 years have passed, but what have you learned, or maybe how has your opinion on this stuff changed or evolved or gotten better or more refined in the last 4 years? Like, what are some things that you realize or understand or see it now versus when you would have first learned about it? And you can just pick one or two things, by the way. So probably a lot, yeah. but a couple of things is just fine.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest, most important things that I've learned over time and with this particular experience is that just knowing about something doesn't have the same effect. Well, it's interesting because I was going to say just knowing about something doesn't have the same effect as being able to like fix the problem,
yeah.
Which kind of now that I say that seems counterintuitive to a lot of what Sarno's work has done. But I guess I'm just one of those people. I think it goes back to what I had said. I think one of the first things that you asked me was when I was talking about not trusting myself. So the knowledge that I had didn't matter because I think there's like something about my particular unconscious world that like one of the main issues is that I don't trust my own perceptions. I don't trust my own body. And so just knowing about the literature, I mean, I did extensive research into not just Sarno and stuff like that, but just I was actually in a PhD in a history of medicine PhD. So I was doing research all about like the history of all sorts of psychosomatic illnesses and just like the medical industry, a lot of stuff. And all of that knowledge really didn't matter if at the end of the day, I didn't give myself if I didn't allow myself to just be right about something.
Yeah.
And so that like, and I don't know, there's the other thing I learned was that, yeah, just kind of getting to the point where you just can't be bothered to pay attention anymore was more important than anything that I actually like intellectually learned.
Yep.
And I do think that just as one last thing, I think for a lot of people, I think it's amazing that for a lot of people just reading some of the literature and getting this new knowledge actually does result in a very comforting and then healing experience with pain that they've had for a long time. But I know that there are also a lot of people who struggle with internalizing the just like the knowledge itself. So I don't know, like I'm one of those people and I literally have no pain anymore. So
do you think that it gets tougher for people to internalize that and really use it the longer that they've been in pain, just based on your research and kind of what you know about it now? Or do you think it doesn't really matter?
You know what? I don't think that it has to do with duration of pain actually, because I think that it has to do with, this is going to get, I feel like I could go like really too conceptual here, but, because I know for me, it was really about, I was kind of punishing myself. Like I didn't want to let myself succeed in a thing that I was interested in. B, I didn't feel like I deserved to. So like it was more of those aspects, those emotional aspects that were really deep seated. That was what ended up being the source of resistance and what like prolonged the pain. So it wasn't like I almost think it's better to, or you have a better chance of spontaneously recovering if you sort of have never thought about these things and yeah. Then you're presented with this information and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I get you. It almost sounds like some of the language that you're using sounds a lot like a self-sabotage kind of a concept.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I haven't heard anybody explain it in that way, but that also would make quite a bit of sense. As I'm thinking up and down the line of, I mean, you're probably interviewed, I don't know, 230 that I've done or 220 that I've done. And it's, I mean, that'd be pretty persistent up and down the line if I had interviewed you 5 years ago versus now.
Mm-hmm.
So, Cecilia, thank you so much, for being here and telling your story. And, I hope that you have a great trip out east. Let's keep in touch. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cecilia. Bye.